Okay. Babylon is falling down. Okay. It's coming to an end. Yeah. Last one standing. Let's go.
Feel the curtains closing, yeah. My eyes shut, time's up. I reached the point of time where I made my mind up. Yeah. I threw away my clothes because I ran out of luck a long time ago. Now I'm on my own trying to find my throne. I'm in the zone and it's best to stay alone. And if you shiver through your bones, you better pick up your phone. Yeah. If your friends turn their back and give you the dial tone, just take advice from Erica and call Tyrone. Cause Hen ain't gonna be there. Yeah. It ain't cause I'm scared. Never. It's cause the end is there, so I'm skipping out of here. So y'all can keep on stressing and growing gray hair. I'm marching on to my blessing, I hope you got it clear. I'm headed through the woods like Little Red Riding Hood. And I ain't scared of the big bad wolf, I wish he would. Approach me in the wilderness, see what she could. Let's put an end to the wicked, it's time for the good.
You gotta stay strong, endure to the end. You already know, ride this thing out. Talk to him, Uriah.
Yeah, I got him. Just a messenger. Just spreading the word.
What?
You don't like it? That's cool. But if you do,
yeah.
Here we go, here we go. Another one of them episodes like a minister, phantom sneaks in.
Okay.
There's a disturbance in the force. Can I take any more? Never know. Let the message stay on course.
Okay.
You want me to deviate? I want you to get it straight.
What?
I'm not one to hesitate. I play it to checkmate.
Okay.
Go ahead and draw your sword.
Yeah.
What you keep on talking for? Babble on, Babylon. I see what you're really on. Got a couple guns, a couple bombs, got a couple spies, a couple lies. So
yeah.
It's no surprise when you raid my house. But the only thing you find staring is a mouse.
That's it.
I'll be headed out the back. Let everything intact. Go ahead and check it. Aha! The wilderness on my heart.
Okay.
So I stay set up.
Yeah.
I care less how you feel.
Nope.
I know the real deal.
Yep.
What my father says, it will come to pass. Yeah. I'm just a messenger.
What?
Don't shoot the messenger. Yeah. It's about to be the end. Felt like
what?
I'm losing my people.
It's all good.
But I gained a brother.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brothers and sisters, you are listening to Signs and Wonders, the broadcast that came right on time. I'm your host, Dawid Yaakov Maccabeus. Today's date is March 24th, 2012. Thank you so much for coming today. I ask you to download. I cannot overemphasize that, because by downloading the broadcast, if they do happen to turn off the internet, which they threaten to do, then these downloads will act as proof that the things that I said were going to happen, happened. Now, I'm not trying to put myself as no prophet or nothing like that. It's not about that. What I mean is that I'm explaining to you about the about how the Hebrews are the seed of Yaakov, and how it is stated in scriptures that we will have victory, and all of the things that people did not know how to read will come to pass. The system that rules the world is going to fall, and the ones that rule, or the ones that will pick up the pieces, that will show the world how it should be done are those that love the Most High. Okay? Now, this will be explained later. I ask that you download the broadcast, and then you, if you want to know how to listen to them, you start from the first thing I said, who I am, and then go through it step by step, okay, until we reach to this point. And then you'll start to have an understanding on what it is that I'm doing here, okay? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm actually recording this program on my system, and the reason why I'm recording it on the system is because just in case it gets just in case this broadcast gets shut off, I can, you know, have this and then upload it later. Now, it's very important, okay? If you don't understand this now, you will understand it later. Okay, now, I wanted to call Brother D to get him in here on this broadcast, but since it was last minute, I really didn't get the information to him to actually call in. So Brother D's not going to be here to help me with the calls, so I ask that you be patient. But this allows Brother D to kind of just relax and then just listen and you know, and enjoy himself. Brother D, I hope you have a better week next week. And, you know, you have my love, my brother. Okay, now, before we begin, I'm going to open in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, Yah, I ask that you are with me today on this broadcast. I ask, O Father, that you allow me to speak the things that I need to say to my brothers and sisters. I ask that you bind and bound any demonic force, the principalities in high places that wish to interrupt this broadcast, O Father. Father, I thank you for my humble heart. Oh, Father, thank you. Father, I thank you for my patience. Oh, Father. Father, I ask that you continue to just bless your chosen seed. Oh, Father, so when we hear the word, we know that it's your voice. Father, I thank you. I thank you for having patience with us. And I thank you for the things that you are doing to us to show us that you love us, Father. Hallelujah. I thank you, Father. I thank you. Father, I pray that you hear this prayer in the name of our ancestors. Jacob, Isaac, Abraham, oh Father, Noah, Adam. Thank you for that wonderful line of that that was there to produce the seed of Yahweh. And Father, I ask that you give revenge to those that died in the slave trade, that continue to die all over this world, our recent ancestors, Father. And we thank you for Yahshua, whether it is of the 33 AD story or the 160 BC story. Yahshua, the teacher of righteousness, O Father. Thank you for him, for putting us back on track. I thank you in the name of Yahshua. Hallelujah. 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 Okay, y'all. This broadcast is called The Great Debate, or just The Debate. What I'm going to do is I might open the broadcast to callers if they want to comment on it. But this is going to be one of those where you really just want to listen, because this is for documentation purposes. And I hope that and pray that you will understand the importance of it after after the completion of this broadcast. Okay, now let me explain. 2 days ago, I did a broadcast about the Passover, okay? And on this broadcast, I played somebody by the name of Stokely Carmichael. He changed his name to Kwame Ture. Kwame Ture lived in, I believe, Guyana, and then he moved because he had to have cancer treatment in Cuba. And I think that's where he passed away at. I have to be 100% sure of that. Why am I mentioning Kwame Ture? Well, he is a figure that has such importance in our society as African-American communities that it cannot be overemphasized that we need to learn who this man was and the importance that he did in our community for us. Stokely Carmichael was the prime minister of the Black Power movement. Okay? This man was so feared that the FBI followed him damn near every day of his life until he died. He passed away at the age of 57, and many believe that he was poisoned, because we now understand about these cancer, they can actually give you cancer now because it's created in the laboratory. So many believe that Kwame Ture might have been a victim of this. Now, I wouldn't be surprised, but it's funny how he died before all this craziness happened. Maybe they were scared that he would talk, but yet we don't know who Kwame Ture is. Now, you will know him after tonight, because I'm going to explain something. Now, I have a way of seeing things differently, because I do a lot of research, and since I do a lot of research, I listen to different sides of the story. I didn't know that I had a revolutionary mind. A revolutionary mind is a mind that has the ability to, understand the dialectic of two sides of a discussion, meaning that you have to listen to both sides in order to know what is truth. And once you weigh both sides of a story, a honest mind and an honest man will conclude which part is true. But sometimes you need more information in order to figure that out. Okay? Now, I'm not going to sit here and yak forever, because I know I want to really get to it. The point I want to make here about this broadcast is that I'm going to play some broadcast that Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, did when he was alive. And after I play it, then we are going to speak about it, or I'm going to speak about it. Then I'm going to continue to play it. And then afterwards, during this broadcast, it will become self-evident on why it is important that we understand who Stokely Carmichael was, and understand who Dr. Kwame Nkrumah was. Okay? Kwame Nkrumah. Now, I feel very embarrassed because I didn't know these men when I was growing up. And I feel even more embarrassed that when I became a man, in this understanding, I still was pretty much clueless about Dr. Kwame Nkrumah and Kwame Ture. The significance of these two men cannot be understated. Cannot be understated. So I beg of you to study as much of them as possible, because it is a significant part of being a Hebrew of the seed of Yaakov. And with that, I'm going to play part one, okay, of Stokely Carmichael.
In 1965, while working for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, I was, through another member, a female member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, presented the topic of Zionism. This female member, Snake, happened to have come in contact while working in South America with Palestinian forces. I myself had no scientific understanding of Zionism, and started within the circle of SNCC quietly, unbeknown to certain elements. We had every month we read one book on Zionism. And since 1965 till today, at least, I read one book a month on concerning Zionism, or broaden it out, of course, the history of Judaism. I have attended many anti-Zionist international symposiums in Baghdad, in Tripoli. I've attended many meetings of the Palestine National Council, Corporation, Palestine National Council, Congress, Palestine National Congress. And, of course, I've had great working relationships with anti-Zionist forces within the Jewish community. In order for us to properly understand the topic, a clear delineation must be made between Judaism and Zionism. I understand that this creates certain problems in certain certain elements within the society. But even if one doesn't agree with my statement, at least one should understand the general outlines which allowed me to arrive at the statements that I do. Of course, Judaism is a religion. And we know that religions, of course, Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels in the Communist Manifesto said that religion is the opium of the masses of the people. Of course, this statement is correct in the particular instance of Europe. It is not correct, generally speaking. The error that is made by those who have been dominated by Europe is that the particular history of Europe usually becomes the general history of the world. And this certainly should not be done. We said in the particular instance where Marx and Engels both said that religion is the opium of the masses of the people, they were correct for Europe. If one would look properly at Europe, one would see that Europe has never produced any universal religion. All universal religions that have come to Europe have come from the outside: Judaism, Islam, Christianity. One would also note that the question of religious differences in Europe is dominantly intolerant. That is to say, they burn Jews at the stake, they burn Muslims at the stake, they burn Christians at the stake, they burn non-believers at the stake. Outside of Europe, certainly in Africa, which we may use as an example, the problem of religious intolerance, the problem of religious differences is not dominantly intolerant, but dominantly tolerant. That is not to say that in Africa one does not find religious conflict here and there, but it is not the normal way of life. Thus, this question is particular to Europe. The question of Zionism, too, will have a lot to do with the particular history of Europe, not with the particular history of areas outside of Europe, and particularly Africa. Of course, this question of Judaism as a religion is necessary for us to understand. As a revolutionary, I understand, unlike Mr. Marx and Mr. Engels, that religion is not the opium of the masses, but on the contrary, religion must be used as an arm by the revolutionary forces. Certainly, our history has demonstrated this. Just since we're speaking all the time of Martin Luther King is a clear example, but even if you go back through our history, you will find those who've been inspired to fight for the people, that their motivations come from religious inspiration. So we then, as revolutionaries, do not consider religion to be the opium of the masses, not us. We say the position here is entirely different in Africa. There is a Judaism, and Zionism must be, the religion of Judaism and the political philosophy of Zionism must be completely separated. Judaism is a religion. As an African, I'm very proud of this religion because it was given to the world by my people. Judaism began in Africa. We must be clear here. Of course, forces seeking everywhere to stop nonsense will make it appear as if Africa didn't give Judaism to the world, but others came from the outside and gave it to Africa. This is nonsense, bourgeois lies, and racist manipulation against Africa. Africa gave monotheism to the world, belief in one God. And at the time that Africa gave monotheism to the world, belief in one God, every other area surrounding Africa were believing in cows, were believing in moons, were believing in the sun. It was Africa and Africa alone that gave monotheism to the world. That is why Judaism had to be born in Africa. It presented the proper conditions for Judaism to be born there. Sigmund Freud, in his book Moses and Monotheism, his last book, and the book usually hidden, it's hard to get, and I don't see why, I find the book to be a particularly interesting book and the conditions under which it were written. Mr. Freud began to write the book, I believe, in Austria. And because of Nazi occupation, he had to leave. And he took all the notes with him and went to Britain and hurried very much to write the book. Of course, this book, The Moses and Monotheism, here Freud comes to show through archaeological proofs. Freud comes to show through historical proof. So Freud comes to throw through psychoanalytical proof that Judaism began in Africa, and not only this, but Moses himself was an African. Of course, the early priests of the religion were Africans, as they had to be. They were the ones who recorded the religion. Thus, when I take a position against Zionism, for action, when I hear people tell me that I'm anti-Semitic, which makes no sense at all because Judaism has nothing to do with Semitic people, one is a religion, the other is a biological specification, and the Palestinians certainly are Semitic. Mr. Arafat is a Semite. So if I support the Palestinians, I cannot be anti-Semitic, that's clear. But this is all confusion here. And this confusion is well done to keep people more confused. But we're revolutionaries and we believe in dialectics. Out of confusion comes clarity. Since because our time is limited and we want a lot of time for question, we want to make it clear. Judaism was given to the world by Africa. This is clear and undeniable fact.
Okay. Now, I want you to hear that first part. And understand now, as the broadcast gets more and more in-depth, as I play the different parts in it, he's going to start getting into more details about Zionism. Now, Kwame Ture was actually explaining to the world, or to his audience, about the Hebrews actually being of color at that time. Explaining perfectly and articulating it in a way based on research that he has done from reading books on Zionism and Judaism, understanding that is out of Africa. Okay? Now, this is very important for later on, but understand that, though. The Hebrews are a people of color. It came out of Africa. The lines and the borders were drawn by the Europeans in order for one purpose only, and that is for the exploitation of the land. Usurpation and also economics. It's always about economics. Okay, now I'm going to play part two. Okay, here we go.
Our time is limited and we want a lot of time for question. We want to make it clear. Judaism was given to the world by Africa. This is clear and undeniable fact. Those who wish to look at the history and we can develop it, look. Zionism is a political philosophy. It did not come out of Africa. The first organizational conference of Zionism, if my memory serves me correctly, was in 1897 in a place called Bals, Switzerland. B-A-L-S-E. The reason why this meeting had to be held in Bals, Switzerland was because the majority of Orthodox Jewry in Europe was against Zionism, totally against it. We must look properly at Zionism, its beginning, and its founder, a man by the name of Theodor Herzl, H-E-R-Z-L. Mr. Herzl was, of course, bourgeois from his toes to his top of his head. He was bourgeois. As bourgeois as you can get, he didn't think about the proletarian. As a matter of fact, Mr. Herzl himself was not a religious person. It's extremely important. And we want to read his diary. He himself says that he's an atheist. You must understand the word properly. An atheist does not just not believe in God. An atheist makes the affirmative statement that God does not exist. Thus, Mr. Herzl is an atheist. I could never understand, until this day it is incomprehensible for me to understand. How is it that Zionism, a political philosophy, born thousands of miles away from Judaism, one born in Africa, the other in Europe, born thousands of years different from Africa, thousands of years different, one doubt, Judaism thousands of years ago, Zionism 1897, and how is it that they can link each other together? And according to the philosophy of Zionism, that they feel that somehow that they have some relationship to Judaism and this promised state that God promised his chosen people. Mr. Herzl did not believe in God. Not only did not believe in God, he said that God did not exist. Now, he who tells me that God does not exist sets out to find a place that God promised to his chosen people. If this is not ludicrous, and this is the basis of course of Zionism, so you can see here the contradictions just everywhere. According to Mr. Herzl, Jews, and the theory that he said is that Jews were discriminated against all over the world. This is not true. In Europe, yes, but not all over the world. We must never make the particular history of Europe, the general history of the world. There's no question that Judaism had trouble in Europe, but we said all religions had trouble in Europe, so that's nothing new for Europe. These are historical facts. Consequently, we must not confuse it. But Mr. Hertz and those who are Zionists say that there's a hatred for Jews which is innate in human beings. This is unscientific garbage. How can anyone tell us, which preaches a religion, that someone cannot be transformed to a higher state when religion is about transforming human beings to a higher qualified state? They come to make an unscientific statement. Not only does Mr. Herschel say that people are innately have an innate hatred for Judaism, but he says there's an innate hatred which we who are non-Jews have will continue forever. Even making an unscientific statement that nothing changes. Everything changes all the time. And certainly if one can be a heathen and become a believer, one who hates Jews can come to understand and correct oneself and come to appreciate Jews and may even become a Jew themselves. Consequently, this statement that innate hatred that the people have against Judaism is garbage, stupidity, unscientific nonsense. Zionism is a political philosophy. According to Mr. Herzl, the Jews were oppressed everywhere and they needed a state, a country, which would save them and give them the right to protect themselves. Thus he called, look at this stupidity. He says that everybody in the world is against Jews. They hate Jews, and now he wants to collect them in one spot where we can all come and get them. Clear stupidity, every aspect of it. Here, Mr. Herschel comes to tell us that not only are we innately against Jews and that we will never change, but the only way Jews themselves will protect themselves is when they come to have their own country. We said Mr. Herschel began in 1897. That great man, V.I. Lenin, at the turn of the century, wrote a book entitled Imperialism, the Highest Stage of Capitalism. Is it Imperialism, the Highest Stage of Capitalism? Yes. If one would read this little pamphlet, one would see here that Mr. Lenin had precisely pointed out that all of the world had already been conquered and divided by colonial powers. There was no else in the world left to be conquered or divided by colonial powers. This is the time when Zionism comes to rise. Zionism comes to look for a state when everywhere else in the world is already dominated. But in order for Mr. Herzl to get a country for Zionists, what he did was to attach himself to imperialism, British imperialism in this case, quite specifically. Of course, as an African who suffered under the heels of British imperialism, I can have no love for it, and certainly I cannot love anyone who attaches themselves to it and attaches themselves to it for the foundation of a state and then call this a liberation movement. Liberation movements fight against imperialism, not with it. Clearly here. The legal foundation of the State of Israel is what is known as the Balfour Declaration. This declaration was issued in 1917. A man in the government of Britain named Balfour wrote a paper and promised the Jews a national home. The national home he promised them was an area which Britain was colonizing, Palestine. Palestine didn't belong to the British, just like Ireland doesn't belong to the British, even though they have troops there. But here, these British imperialists signed a note and gave it to the Jews and they accepted it. Where is the morality for this? If you say that Israel belongs to you, then you don't go to a thief to get Israel, you go and take it. Once you go to an immoral being such as British imperialism, and this is the basis for you getting the land, then clearly here those who are truly liberation fighters must question this. The basis, we say, is the Balfour Declaration, and Zionists know it. Now, Zionism is certainly not a liberation movement because it never fought against any imperialism. As a matter of fact, today, Zionism is the baby, child, and infant protector of imperialism in the Middle East. It carries out the interests of American imperialism. As a matter of fact, Zionism and American imperialism is like this. If our tax dollars would stop giving money to Israel, the state would sink tomorrow. And certainly no one can deny that American imperialism is the leading imperialist nation in the world. So we cannot see how a liberation movement is so tied, string, and ham to American imperialism. They work hand in hand with American imperialism. Thus they can hardly be a liberation movement. In addition to this, Zionism has nothing to do with anything religion, nothing. All religions are concerned with human beings after they die. That's what religions are for. Islam will tell you what happens to you when you die. As a matter of fact, this which forces you to live a good life so that after death you'll be able to enjoy the rewards of heaven. The same is true for Judaism. But Zionism says nothing about the individual after they're dead. They don't give a damn about you. But Zionism has nothing to do with religion at all. And one should not make the confusion here. The Palestinian state belongs to the Palestinian people. This is a fact. Of course, Zionism in the early days made all sorts of nonsensical propaganda. Oh, they ran away, they left the land. I saw one, he said, well, you know, they ran away and left the land. I said, well, they want to come back now? So just get out the way and let them come back. If you said they just ran away on their own. No. Zionism took Palestine through raw and naked terrorism. Naked. Even that butcher, Begin, he will never rest in peace. He who came into a village and terrorized the village to scare the people to run out and was proud of it. This is how Zionism conquered the land. They didn't conquer it, not even with the Torah. They conquered it with the gun passed to them from American imperialism, British imperialism. All the imperialist countries in the world supported them. The Palestinian people have been totally driven out of their land. And Zionism comes to use as a justification for the state religion. There's no state in the world that can claim it's a state because of religion. That's not possible. Zionism cannot say that Jews belong to any one race. They cannot, because we know that Judaism came out of Africa, and the earliest Jews in the world were Africans. Even today, they must admit that those in Ethiopia are Jews, and therefore should come to Israel. So, once you admit this, you admit that, Judaism then is not... This question, Zionism, is not a question of race, but what they see as a nation, of course. But a religion is not a nationality, nor is a religion a nation. Religion transcends, that's the correct word, religion transcends the boundaries, national boundaries. We know that Islam, for example, began in Saudi Arabia. But you will find Frenchmen born in France who adhere to Islam and are true Muslims. It transcends geographical boundaries. We know that Africa stabilized Christianity for the world. But everywhere in the world today, you will find Christians. Religions transcend geographical boundaries. Consequently, Zionism must come to understand that it cannot claim or have anything to do with religion if it doesn't seek to transcend geographical boundaries. And it does not. As a matter of fact, it makes itself boundaries. Of course, these boundaries are not declared. Israel is the only state in the world with undeclared boundaries. Every other state has them, except Israel. Zionism itself shows itself in the flux that it is. Even though in the Zionists want to brag about the intellectual superiority that they have, even today they haven't decided in Israel who is a Jew. Yet they've taken the land for Jews, and they haven't yet decided who is a Jew. Of course, the relationship of Zionism and Judaism and Jews must be properly understood. Zionism dominates all Jewish organizations throughout the world. They were able to do this during World War II. Now, you must understand something about the Judaic religion. This question of the chosen people must be properly understood. Of course, God can never choose any of his children over any of his children, that's clear. Because while governments may discriminate, God cannot. But one can be chosen by God if one chooses God. And so once you choose God, you become God's chosen. And you choose God to do God's work. And, of course, if you will look through all religions, the majority of them, they all have a theme running through them which say that in order to be redeemed, one must suffer. And Judaism takes seriously this axiom of religions. The theory of Judaism is that the Jews must suffer for humanity, for the cause of humanity, and their suffering will redeem not only them, but all of humanity. Certainly, this attitude in life must be saluted by every serious man and woman. This attitude towards the willingness to suffer for all of humanity, for that it be redeemed, must be appreciated by all revolutionaries. Because when we speak of chosen people, we must understand precisely the context in which it is done, in which it is said. So that means that not only are Jews chosen people, but a Muslim who truly chooses God, a Christian who truly chooses God, anyone who truly chooses God, is God's chosen people. We said the basis for it, any other way will make it appear as if indeed It is a discriminating God, and no one can believe that God discriminates. God must be a God of justice. The Torah tells us this everywhere. Zionism, then, has absolutely nothing to do with Judaism. It seeks to confuse the people. Of course, this is the job of all political philosophies, all backward political philosophies. They seek to dominate religions and to use religions as a tool in their exploitation.
Okay. Let me make this statement. I want people to for the chat room, I'm sorry that I don't want anybody to write in it yet. Not yet, okay? But what I will ask that you do is the next file that I play, write down some questions and write down some topics on a piece of paper. So if you have time, go get a piece of paper now. Write down the questions and concerns that you have so we can bring them up during discussion, because this is called the debate. And what I want to do is I want us to really listen to this, and I want us to actually debate it after this is done. And when we debate it, I call it a debate. If someone isn't objecting to what he was saying about Zionism, then it gives you an opportunity to talk about it, because, you know, this is a Hebrew council meeting and we discuss. So, and if it's a debate, that means that there is a dialectic. There's a person that speaks, the other person speaks, and then we get clarity out of what is said. This is actually what Stokely Carmichael speaks about, and it makes perfect sense. So, what I want you to do is I want you to get a piece of paper, write down some things. Now, I wrote down some things when I was listening to that. Okay? Now, one thing I want to bring to your attention, during the beginning of the broadcast, he was beginning of his audio file, he was speaking about Herzl. Okay? Herzl, the father of Zionism, the father of Israel, the one that actually created the star and everything else. He specifically states, now mind you, Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, is reading one book a month. I think it was maybe for years. I don't know how long. He was doing it for a long time. And so he knows. He analyzed Herzl, the father of Zionism. And this man says he's an atheist. Now, you and I that read the Bible understand, read scriptures, understand that a man of the Most High, a man of the Most High, okay, believes in the Most High. How can an atheist, one that believes that the Most High does not exist, be honored to have a state of Israel, Zion, Jerusalem, the promised land that was given to us during the covenant that we made with the Most High? And also, when we came out of the captivity of Egypt, you have to have a significant amount of belief in the Most High in order to be honored that land. So how can you say that you are the chosen when you don't even believe he exists? That right there should be enough for those Christians that want to throw Zionism in our face. Now, I say that last statement for this. He mentioned the Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration was in 1917. Now, when we read the Balfour Declaration, okay, which I have it in front of me, it says, His Majesty government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use the best endeavor to facilitate the achievement of this object. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine or the rights and political status enjoyed by the Jews in other countries. Okay. Now, whenever I read these documents, you never hear the name of the Most High. Okay. Now, this is the letter that was sent in order for the Jews to get the State of Israel. And it says, Foreign Office, November 2nd, 1917. Now, always remember, November is one of those months that they just love. November is actually the ninth month, not the 11th. Remember that. It says, Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty Governor the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which have been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty Governor, government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national homeland for the Jewish people, and will use their effort endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and right religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Yours sincerely, author James Balfour. And this right here is the Balfour Declaration. That's it. No mention of the Most High, no mention of scriptures, no mention of why, no mention of anything but just a letter to one of the richest men on the planet, Lord Rothschild. But another document which was not mentioned was the Blackstone Memorial. Look it up. The Blackstone Memorial was actually written in 1891. This is written by Christian Zionists. This is a document that was the inspiration of the Balfour Declaration, but is never mentioned because it was a concept of Christianity, not a concept of Judaism. Very important fact to understand. Okay. Now, I can keep going on and on and on, but I'm going to play the next audio file. And this time, I want you to write down what, you know, some questions that you have for later on when I actually open this up to questions and discussions. Okay. So now let me see the next audio file I'm going to play. Okay, here we go.
Imperialism was able to do it so well with Christianity that Christianity hunted slaves for imperialism. But in no way does this mean that we attack Christianity. No! When we judge a system, we judge it by its principles, not by its adherents. Were we to judge any system by its adherents, all of them would have to be destroyed because human beings are weak in relationship to their fidelity to principles. We do not judge Christianity by Christians. We judge it by its principles. Were we to judge Christianity by Christians, all of us would agree it should have been wiped out of the face of the earth a long time ago. We do not judge Islam by Muslims, not even Khomeini, notwithstanding. We judge it by its principles. Just in passing, do not let capitalism, this stupid and backward system, confuse you. You do not judge socialism by socialists. That's all their nonsense about the East only threatens those who know nothing about socialism. I'm a socialist, Jack, and it hasn't shaken me a bit. The principles of socialism are intact. Thus, there must be no confusion here. The principles of Zionism are unjust. The question is whether or not Zionism is white supremacy. I need not answer the question. The United Nations gave the answer years ago. They said Zionism is racism. And certainly given the power of lobby that the state of Israel has worldwide, you know that if this vote came down in the United Nations, it was after a serious struggle, and there must have been a determined voice to ensure it. Zionism is racism, according to the United Nations. So this one, I won't even hide behind the United Nations. I know it's racism. Any time you take a people's land and come to take, well, anyway, Zionism itself does the same thing that imperialism did with Christianity. Zionism seeks to dominate Judaism. And just like some Christians were catching slaves in the name of God, so Jews are shooting Palestinians in the name of God. Of course, in no way does this shake our faith in Judaism. Not at all. Zionism, of course, has certain conditions which allow for it to arise. We said they came to control Judaism after World War II. We explained that Zionists have a feeling that Jews have a feeling that, number one, they come to accept the suffering of the world to redeem humanity. And the Jews have been thinking, according to their history and according to their religion, that if they kept on going and suffering, at one time, somewhere, a Redeemer will appear, and this Redeemer will help them and lead them towards a higher level of human society for the entire world. But if you look at the suffering of the Jews in Europe, you will see they suffered everywhere. Everybody gave it to them. The Russians gave it to them. The Spanish gave it. Everybody. The British. Everybody. They were tormented. There's no question here. Tortured in Europe. This is clear. And these Jews, the honest Jews, the serious Jews, the religious Jews, they were looking for a Redeemer. And when they thought their Redeemer was to come, and even if you look at the history of Judaism in Europe, you will see they had many false prophets, opportunists, who came to jive the people, just like Christian Jack-Lick preachers come to jive us. No difference. We're the same people. All people. Yes, they came to jive them and to make believe they were prophets. They were not. They were false prophets. And if you study the history of Judaism, the Jews faced seriously for following these false prophets. But they kept believing and believing that really their Redeemer was coming. And they thought around 1939, 1940, their Redeemer would come, and Hitler came. And when Hitler came, the rabbis were completely lost for direction. They could hardly explain to the people. It was now that Zionism stepped in. Yes, we are Jews, but we must do like everybody else. We must take what belongs to us. And since Israel belongs to us, we must take it. And until we take Israel, this suffering will continue. I must tell you that the Zionists worked hand in hand with the Nazis. I understand it precisely. They worked hand in hand with the Nazis was to scare the Jews and to give them the political power to dominate Jewish organizations. Needless to say that after 1948 with the State of Israel, it was a fiat accompli. At this time, Zionist organizations controlled all Jewish organizations. We want to make it clear here, not all Jews in these organizations were even aware of the fact that Zionism controlled their organizations and thus directed their energies towards Zionist goals. Here, of course, it could be easily made with confusion because these Jews were wanting to go to Israel, and Zionists got Israel, and Israel is our home and our spiritual base, etc., etc. You can see how easy it is to confuse. But we cannot be confused. Any religion that oppresses our people must be fought with without pity and without mercy. And no one can tell me that Judaism is a religion which comes to oppress Palestinians. It's Zionism that does this, not Judaism. Of course, Zionism tries to hook Judaism together, making them one and the same. This is to help them. By doing this, because no one wants to attack a religion, who wants to attack a religion? It's just like when they say anti-Semitic, which has no meaning at all. They want to get you afraid. Who wants to attack a people? But they're not even Semites. Golda Meir is a Cossackoid. This is a biological fact. It's a biological fact. All the leaders, Abba Eban was born in South Africa. There's nothing Semitic about him. He is Cossackoid 100%. Thus, there's no question here when they talk about anti-Semitic. They may say that I'm anti-Judaic. That's the best they can say. But I'm a conscious African. I gave the religions of the world. I cannot be against the contributions of my ancestors. So in no way can I be anti-Judaic. But I am anti-Zionist and will remain so until it is destroyed, because it is an unjust, illegal, immoral, and racist system. What is the solution?
Okay. Now, I hope you are writing down some notes for your questions later. Now, I cannot overemphasize this. There was a time in the United States of America when if you were to even mention the name Zionism and criticize against it, you'd be done. You'd be through. Thrown in prison, or utterly destroyed by the media. But a lot has happened. That grip of Zionism is starting to loosen because people now are starting to read and understand the core of what the philosophy of Zionism is. And what they do is they learn by example. OK. Okay? They learn by example. Okay? Now, we can now look at Zionism and compare it with history and say, is the world better off with it? Or is the world worse off with it? That's just a question. And that's for you to compare. You can do an honest comparison in your mind and take a view of the world and see, is this something that is of the Most High? Okay? Now, I know you notice how they mentioned about how the Zionists worked with the Nazis. How many times do people have to say this? We hear it throughout history. But yet, to mention it, you are called anti-Semitic. But yet, as Stokely Carmichael says, Carme Torre says, that it is impossible to be anti-Semitic when he is for the Arabs. Because the Arabs are a Semitic people. So how can he be anti-Semitic? And all what Semitic means is that you are a Hebrew. Abraham would have been Semitic. So therefore, the seed of Abraham is Semitic. Abraham, Isaac, Yaakov is Semitic. Ishmael is Semitic, the father of the Arabs. These are a Semitic people. So how can you be anti-Semitic when you will give your life for the peace and right to live of the Palestinian people? People will go on a flotilla and get shot for the right of these Palestinians to live. And these people are anti-Semitic. So how can you be anti-Semitic? Okay? So when that phrase about the Nazi keeps coming up and they use anti-Semitism, we have to question that wholeheartedly and say that is no longer valid in this discussion because you are Caucasoid. You are from the Caucasus Mountains. You are Germanic. You are a Germanic tribe. That's fact. Look it up. Do research. Read books. Understand. If the truth hurts, it's okay. That just means that you're learning something. It's no problem. All right, now, there's something that he said about the United Nations. And he said that the United Nations in 1975 voted that Zionism was racism. Now, this is very, very important, and don't overlook that. And write it down. Zionism is racism. And if this broadcast gets cut off, I want you to know that you can actually find this on YouTube or on the web. And you just put Stokely Carmichael. And then Plus speaks on Zionism. And then, you know, you will probably find this particular audio file intact on the web so you can listen to it yourself. And there's actually a YouTube site that you can get the material from. It's Kwame Ture. And you look on YouTube and you'll find every single file there that you can listen to it. Okay? And I'm gonna mention that about the United Nations and that Zionism, how they said that Zionism is racism. Okay? We're going to go through that. But before I do that, when he first came on, he was speaking about he's a socialist. Now, we have to understand, what is socialism? We've been told in the United States, because I live in the United States, and now I live in Sweden. Sweden's actually a socialist country. So I'm able to live in a capitalist country and then live in a socialist country. And then I can, by example, tell you what it's like in both instances. Because I have the experience. Okay? Now, what it actually is socialism? It's equalitarianism. Equalitarianism. Okay? And what is equalitarianism? Or equalitarian? It says asserting results from or characterized by belief in the equality of all people, especially in political, economic, or social life. Equal. I mean, it just means that two people are equal. You see eye to eye with somebody. Nobody is above the other. Okay? This is the government of the African nations. This is an African concept. If you look at the Ten Commandments and read how the Hebrews lived, they lived the equalarian lifestyle. This is that concept. This is socialism. What does it say? It says a theory of a system of social organization that advocates the vesting of the ownership and control of the means of production, the distribution of capital, land, etc., in the community as a whole. It is not selfishness. Spreading the love, okay? What's evil about that? So I'm going to get into that more when I actually read about a very special individual that we should know about. Hopefully I have time to get through that. Let me see. Is there anything else I wanted to discuss here? Okay. Now I'm going to play the final broadcast, the final file. And like I said, I want you to take some notes. And okay, let me find it. I'm going to set it up. Okay, here we go.
The solution is correct, as handed down by the Palestine Liberation Organization. The state of Palestine must be secular, mundane state. It's as simple as that. The Jews must come to understand that this is their fight. And unless they take on this fight, they will allow Zionism to make their religion a gutter religion, as Farrakhan says it will become. Thus, Jews have a responsibility here, and we want to let it be known that there are many Jews who are anti-Zionist, many, even here in America. And they write some very good books, excellent books. So Jews cannot confuse us and say all Jews are Zionists. No, even the Orthodox Jews in Brooklyn, they say a Zionist can never be a Jew, and a Jew can never be a Zionist, and they're correct. It's like God and the devil. We say the Palestinians have the correct solution to the problem. The state of Palestine must be a secular state. Those of us who truly are against Zionism have a double fight here. Not just a fight against Zionism by all means necessary, but also a fight against those who are intolerant of Judaism. A true way to undermine the force that Zionists have in the Jewish communities throughout the world is to ensure the tolerance of the religion of Judaism and use force where necessary to ensure this tolerance. Thus, here, an educational program is necessary, but we point out here, this educational program necessary for the tolerance of Judaism is attacked clearly towards Europe because it is Europe that is intolerant. Anyone would look throughout the world and see Jews have lived in harmony throughout the world. It is only with the intrusion of Zionism into the Middle East, into North Africa, that one finds problems between Judaism and non-Jews in these areas. It is Zionism that caused all this. There's no question that Zionism will be destroyed, not one. Even today, we can see it's growing. I remember in 1967, when as chairman of SNCC, the last act I did before resigning as chairman was to write a press conference against the Israeli war of 1967. I didn't read the statement because that would have caused too much problems as I was writing. It was read by a brother at that time who was called Rap Brown, Jamil El Amin today, and he sure read the statement. The statement was clear. When we read the statement, we were isolated by everybody. SNCC was called everything, and I saw the power of Zionism. I came to see it. I came to know it. The Student Nonviolent Coordinator took a strong position against the war in Vietnam. Not only did we take a position against the war in Vietnam, but we took a position against Zionism, against imperialism itself, and the army in America by issuing the slogan, "Hell no, we won't go." We intended to break the draft, and we broke it. Thus not giving American imperialism the chance to suck up youth who knew nothing and send them off to die for the interests of imperialism. But while we did this, Zionists everywhere supported SNCC. Our people isolated, we spoke against the Vietnam War. We spoke against the draft. They supported us. But once we spoke against Israel, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was destroyed in 3 months. These are facts. These are facts. Oh, I remember those who were weak and sick at that time. The weak knees came and said, "We've got to stop." Stop? Are you crazy? Stop. This is Africa here. We have integrity. What do you mean, stop? Man, we continued and we suffered for it and suffered seriously. just because we took a position, and our position was clear. Egypt is Africa. How is it that you expect me, an African, to sit in America? You a Jew, a Zionist is what you are. You supporting Israel, attacking Egypt, and I can't say nothing.
Oh, Egypt is Africa, Jack. You touch that, you touch me. Everywhere we... But today, Zionism is no longer as powerful as it was in America. It's being questioned everywhere and attacked all the time.
It's weaker today than it was then. I remember in the African community, they even formed a committee called, what is it, Blacks in Support of Israel Committee, BASIC. Andrew Young was a member of it. Oh, yes, all of them. The names are there. History doesn't cover anything. In the African community, even now when we spoke against Zionism, they put others to confuse us. Even Martin Luther King himself was confused on this issue. When we attacked Israel, he said, any attack on Israel, this is a quote, any attack on Israel, no matter how you camouflage it, is an attack on Semitism, is anti-Semitic. Poor King was confused. He was very confused. To attack Israel has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. But we can understand. King could not take the position we took. King support claimed clearly from Zionists. Who didn't say they were Zionists, but of course any attack against Israel would have meant serious problems for King. But for us, we had nothing to worry about except the truth. And the truth was that they were attacking Israel. Israel is our home, and we had to defend Africa. So King himself was confused, but today, even those who follow King's footsteps, like Reverend Jesse Jackson, had to go and meet with Arafat. In conclusion, I want to show you sincerely how Zionism has come to control the thinking of the people. We know imperialism gives what is known as a one-sided view of history, one-sided. In America, if you want to learn the history of the Indians, you get one side, the side of the cowboy. When one came to talk of Israel, you get only one side, the side of the Zionists. You're not even allowed to look at the other side, the side of the Palestinians. That is to say, all we said in 1967 was simple. Hey, man, look, there's a problem here with two sides. This is one side. That's what we hear. Let's look at the other side and see what they say. But even if you say you want to look at the Palestinian side, they attacked you. They came to show clearly their ideological connection with imperialism and their penchant for a one-sided view of history. But today, that's no longer true. We say, even Jesse Jackson, who says he follows the footsteps of Martin Luther King, must go and meet with Arafat and find out what the Palestinians are saying. One cannot make a judgment about a war unless you know both sides. If Zionism keeps keep everyone confused, only their side. And the issues that they make are unjust and immoral. How can you justify the death of 6 million Jews as the rationalization for taking the land from the Palestinians? The Palestinians did nothing to you. Hitler did everything to you. Hitler lost the war. Germany lost the war. Take your state in Germany. That's where you should take it. Even the Bible says to the victors belong the spoil. Yet the Palestinians did nothing. And they went all the way over there to Palestine. The reason why they were able to do this is because they serve properly the interests of imperialism. They were so confident in their arrogance that they thought that they could start at the tip of Africa and spread and control African liberation movements and also control movements in the East. They're going to get crushed by both of them. Zionism must be destroyed. Judaism as a religion must be respected. Thank you. Ready for the revolution.
Now, what I want to do is I'm going to bring something up that I wanted you to pay attention to, okay? And that's when they were speaking about Zionism and racism. Okay? Now think about this now. The Zionist organization was so tyrannical, and obviously tyrannical, that they brought it up in the United Nations to say to the world that Zionism is racist. But let me be clear, though. It was actually rejected in 1991, but we're going to get to that. Okay? We're going to get to that. But this here is significant because of the implications to the world as a whole in showing that nations voted freely in an organization that is supposed to uphold the law. And we are going to see what happens when this organization does not uphold the law of its member states. Okay? Now, I'm going to read something to you. And this is the case of Zionism becoming racist. Okay? Now, it says here, list of United Nations resolutions concerning Israel. The UN recommended a portion of the former British mandate for Palestine to be allotted to the Jewish population at the time in the 1947 UN petition plan. During the 1947-1948 civil war in Palestine, the UN Security Council passed Resolution 42, the 5th of March 1948, 43, the 1st of April, 44, 1st of April, and 46, 17th of April, which recommended both sides of the conflict to refrain pending the future government of Palestine for any political activities which might produce the rights, claim, or position of either community. Okay? The resolution of 1775, the full text of Resolution 3379, and it says elimination of all forms of racial discrimination. Okay, people, keep your eyes, keep your ears open, because here is where things get interesting. Okay? Now, General Assembly. All right, it says, recalling its resolution 1904-28 of 20th November 1963, proclaiming the United Nations Declaration of the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, and in particular its affirmation that any doctrine of racial differentiation of superiority is scientifically false, moral condemnable, social unjust, and dangerous. And its expression of alarm at the manifestation of racial discrimination still in evidence in some areas in the world, some of which are imposed by certain governments by means of legislation, administrative or other measures, recalling also measures. Okay, now that is important because what I've just read to you was a document. Resolution 1904 in 1963. So the United Nations is defining what racism is. Okay? And then it says, recalling also that in Resolution 3151 G28, I'm sorry, the other one was 18, I'm sorry, okay, 28, of 14th of December 1943, the General Assembly condemned. Now, there's something called inter alia, and I actually have to look that up and do more research on it, but it's I-N-T-E-R-A-L-I-A. It's called inter alia. The unholy alliance. Now, listen to this. Now, what inter alia means, you know, what they're saying is that it is the unholy alliance between South African racism and Zionist taking note on the Declaration of Mexico on the equality of women and their – oh, no, I'm sorry. The unholy alliance between South African racism. Okay, now hold on now. Hold on. Okay. Then it says taking note on the Declaration of Mexico on the equality of women and their contribution to development and Peace in 1975, proclaiming by the World Conference of the International Women's Year, held at Mexico City from 19th of June to 2nd of July 1975, which promulgated the principle that international cooperation and peace required the achievement of national liberation and independence, the elimination of colonialism and neocolonialism, foreign occupation, Zionism, apartheid, and racial discrimination, all its forms, in all its forms, as well as the recognition of the dignity of people and their rights to self-determination. Now, understand now, nations are calling on these resolutions that were already within the United Nations. Resolution 1904, Resolution 3151, okay? And then it says also another resolution. Taking note also, Resolution 77-7, it says, adoption by the Assembly of Heads of State and Government of the Organization of African Unity at its 12th ordinary session held at Kampala for 28th July to 1st of August 1975, which considers that the racist regime in occupation Palestine and the racist regime in Zimbabwe and South Africa have a common imperialistic origin, forming a whole and having the same racist structure and being organically linked in their political and aimed at repression of the dignity and integrity of the human being. I mean, think about this now. Nations got together and they recognized racism in Palestine, Zimbabwe, and South Africa. This is where before South Africa, ended the apartheid in 1992. This is very important. This is before Zimbabwe took over and kicked out all the farmers. So it was extremely racist. And they lumped Palestine in with that. Very important. It was at the United Nations. Okay, then it says, taking note also of the political declaration, the strategy to strengthen international peace and security and to intensify solidarity and mutual assistance amongst non-aligned countries, adopted at the Conference of Ministers of Foreign Affairs of Non-Aligned Countries, held at Lima from 25th to 30th of August 1975, which most severely condemned Zionism as a threat to world peace and security and called upon all countries to oppose the racist imperialistic ideology, determines that Zionism is a form of racism and racial discrimination. Now, did you hear that? Nations voted on this. They voted on this. Now we have to ask the question, that last statement that they said, which most severely condemns Zionism as a threat to world peace and security and call upon all countries to oppose the racist imperialistic ideology. Well, is it a threat to world peace? Well, you know, that's your opinion. This is all up to you. This is your opinion to decide. Is Zionism a threat to world peace? Are these wars that we have today caused by the ideology of Zionism or not? Is it how about neocolonialism? Okay? Or the neocons. This is all Zionism. Is it a threat to world peace? You be the judge. Now, we're going to read the Israeli response because this is very important to understand. This is very important to understand to this conference. This is what they say. In his address to the United Nations General Assembly in the same day, on the 10th of November, 1975, Israeli Ambassador Shaim has Herzog stated, and he says, I can point with pride to the Arab ministers who have served in my government, to the Arab deputy speaker of my parliament, to Arab officers and the men serving of their own violation in our border and police defense forces frequently commanding Jewish troops, to the hundreds of thousands of Arabs from all over the Middle East crowding the cities of Israel every year, to the thousands of Arabs from all over the Middle East coming for medical treatment to Israel, to the peaceful coexistence which has developed, to the fact that Arabic is an official language in Israel on a par with Hebrew, to the fact that it is as natural for an Arab to serve in public office in Israel as it is in Cruius to think of a Jew serving in any public office in an Arab country, indeed being admitted to many of them I wasn't even demanding them. Is this racism? He questions. Okay, and I'm going to stop there. He's basically saying, look, we got Arabs in the government. We got Arabs as police forces. We got Arabs here and here and there. Now, living in America, if you go to a office building and they say, we're not racist. Look, we have a black guy working here. See, now we know the wording because, you know, being a black man in America, if, as soon as you can pick out as many blacks that you have working for you, then you a racist. If you could be like, oh, we got about 10 of them. That means you took the time to count. Okay. So now therefore it's in your consciousness. If he would have said, you know, we have a lot of Arabs in the country. I don't even know that are in government. I don't really recall. I mean, they're there. I mean, it's he would have been outraged, but he's like, there's an Arab here. Okay. Anyway. Now, then it says, it is not that is Zionism in his response. He also said that the resolution was another manifestation of the bitter, here we go, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish hatred, which animates Arab society. Okay. Now, because of the now anti-Semitic. Now, why is it that whenever people say anti-Semitic, they say, oh, no, this is just in reference to the Jews? How did the Jew take over Semitic and say, no, really, this anti-Semitic is only reference to the Jews? Okay, if that's the argument, then we have to say that the Jews are a Semitic people. But the problem is that when we look at the Jew, we realize that he is actually of the Ashkenazi seed, which is not Semitic. It is Germanic. So we have to conquer that little issue right there first before we can throw around that word anti-Semitism. When you read, you will know this. This is a fact. It's biologically impossible for the Caucasoid to be Semitic. But yet, 80% of the world Jews make up the Jews. The 80% of these people are from the Ashkenazi line, which is German. Okay, now, and it says, who would have believed officially by Arab governments, who would have believed that we would today contemplate an Arab society which teaches the vilest anti-Jewish hate in the kindergarten? We are being attacked by a society which is motivated by the most extreme form of racism. See, now they turned it around. Now they're being attacked racially. Known to the world today, expressed so succinctly in words of the leader of the PLO, Yasser Arafat. Arafat is no longer with us. In his opening address at the symposium in Tripoli, Libya. Then he says, there will be no presence in the region other than the Arab presence. Okay? Then he just quotes that. Then he goes, Herzog ended his statement while holding a copy of the resolution. With these words, for us, he says, for us, the Jewish people, this resolution based on hatred, falsehood, and arrogance is devoid of any moral or legal value. For us, the Jewish people, this is no more than a piece of paper and we shall treat it as such. As he concluded his speech, Herzl tore the resolution in half. Okay? Now, he tore this resolution in half. But what he should have said is, an honest man would have said, why? Why do you feel the way you do? We have to talk about this. This is an insult to call Zionism racism. We are not racism. We are of the Most High. They never refer to the Most High. They never refer to the word. It's always a man defending Zionism. He's defending Zionism based on his own opinion without going to the word. That is very important to understand because he is not just defending Zionism. He is defending the Most High if he is in that land. He has taken it upon himself to say, I represent the Creator. Based on the covenant, there is no way that the Most High could be a racist. He would have been indignant on that. But yet, no mention of the Most High. He didn't even ask the people, let's talk about this. Okay? But he just said, not true, anti-Semitism, you're attacking the Jews, this is hatred, and he ripped it up. No dialogue, no discussion. Okay? Now, let's hear the response from the United States. The United States response said, now this is from Daniel Patrick Minehan, the United States Ambassador to the United Nations, in his angry response, he pissed off, how dare you say we're racist, said that the United States does not acknowledge it, will not abide by it, will never acquiesce in this infamous act. What is the acquiescing? The acquiescing is saying, listen, can you just follow the resolutions that you created? Now, this is funny now. Now, this is very important. They are saying we will not acquiesce to this infamous act. But what is the infamous act? Because they didn't come up with anything new. So you have to understand that the United Nations Resolution 190418 was written in 1963 by the United Nations. Resolution 315128 was written in 1973 by the United Nations. Resolution 7712-19175 was written by the United Nations, voted upon by all parties. Okay? So we have to ask the question is, if the United Nations were just saying, follow the resolutions that we have put forth, and a majority of the member states has voted on it, then why did the United States and Israel act so in hatred of this document, even ripping it up without even saying, hold on. If you really think of us this way, if you view us this way, let's dialogue, let's speak about it, because this is not what we want. Okay? Now, here's the aftermath. It says, Israel made revocation of Resolution 3379, a condition of its participation in the Madrid Peace Conference in 1991. Now, what they're saying here is that there's a peace conference in Madrid, which I'm going to read later. And this peace conference, they brought up this resolution specifically. Here's why. Says Resolution 3379 was revoked in 1991 by UN General Assembly, and it's called Resolution 4686, the name of the UN Avenue in Haifa, Jerusalem in Tel Aviv, was switched to the Zionist Avenue as a response to the United Nations decision in Campbell, California, in the United States. A group of high school students attempted to solicit signatures on the premises of a local shopping center for petition against Resolution 3379. The result was the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision in Pruneyard Shopping Center versus Robinson in 1980. Now, I wrote that because it's very important, because what you have to understand is that there is a documentation, a court case that started us to be allowed to protest in shopping centers in California, because they tried to this one person tried to ban these children from wanting to bring forth the revoking of 3779. Understand, 3779 was to say that the Zionist movement or the Zionism was racist. But these children wanted to revoke it. Now, they never explained. Were these children, were they Jewish? Were they Christians? Were they Zionists? I don't know. It doesn't really explain that. What was their motivation behind it? But the thing is that a shopping center rejected them. He wanted to get them out. So there was already feelings about this, about Zionism in the United States. Okay? Now, here's one thing. I want to show you that when there was a vote, okay, how the vote went. In 1975, it had 72 nations voted yes, 35 nations voted no, and 32 nations said abstain. That means they didn't want to get involved. They just wanted to remain neutral. Okay. Now, the ones that sponsored it, I'm going to read a list. It was Afghanistan, Algeria, Bahrain, Cuba, Domone, Egypt, Guinea, Iraq, Jordan, Kuwait, Lebanon, Libyan Arab Republic, Mauritania, Morocco, North Yemen, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, South Yemen, Sudan, Syria, Arab Republic, Tunisia, and United Arab Emirates. All these nations just sponsored it. That means this is what we feel. Check it out. So they brought it forth. Listen to this. All right. Then 72 nations voted on it. I'm not going to go through all the names, but Uganda's in there. Okay. Of course, Guyana. All right. Now we have the nations that voted to say no, but to say no, it's not racist. Now we'll read them. 35. Australia, Austria, Bahamas, Barbados, Belgium, Canada, Central African Republic, Costa Rica, Denmark, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Fiji, Finland, France, Federal Republic of Germany, Haiti, Honduras, Iceland, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Ivory Coast, Liberia, Luxembourg, Maui, Netherlands, New Zealand, Nicaragua, Norway, Panama, Switzerland, Sweden, United Nations of Great Britain, and Northern Ireland, United States of America, and Uruguay. Now, if you were to do a research on these countries and how integrated they are with the states of the United States or Israel, you will see why they voted. Very important. Okay? Now, the question is, if this resolution passed, what have they done in 1991 that made it be null and void? Only 16 years after, right? Okay, now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the rejection of it. Okay? Read the rejection of it. Now, if you want to call in, the number is, it's 347-826-9484. That's 347-826-9484. You can call in to discuss what I'm talking about. Plus, just raise your hand, and then I will answer the call. Because after this, I'm going to open up for calls, and then I'm going to try to finish up on the other with the other stuff that I wanted to say. Okay, now this is the rejection of Zionism as racism, and it reads: Now open your ears to those that understand how this world works, based on the New World Order and the controlling factors, and you know. Okay, let's just listen up. The Madrid Conference was hosted by the government of Spain and co-sponsored by the United States of America and the USSR. It convened on October 30th, 1999, and lasted three days. It was an early attempt by the international community to start a peace process through negotiations involving Israel and the Palestinians, as well as Arab countries including Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. It was the last conference held with both the USSR and U.S. presence. You understand that? It was the last conference held with the USSR and the United States present. The USSR collapsed later that year. So the same year they held this conference, this is saying Russia was so weak, that after this conference, they collapsed. Then it says, in the aftermath of the 1991 Gulf War, that's very important because now they win the war in like days. What was it, 100 days or less? Now all those nations that lost the war, you know, now the United States is like, okay, you know, you got our back. Now it says U.S. President George H.W. Bush and the Secretary of State James Baker, everybody knows about this, these characters, formulated the framework of objectives. So this was formulated by George Herbert Walker Bush and James Baker, and together with the Soviet Union, extended a letter of invitation on October 30, 1991, to Israel, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, and Palestine. The impact of the Madrid Peace Conference. Okay, now here's important. It says, in the negotiation leading to the Israel made revocations of UN Resolution 3379, a condition of its participation in the conference. This was accomplished shortly thereafter with the passage of Resolution 4686. So Israel said, I am not even going to be involved in the peace process unless you revoke UN Resolution 3379. Well, hold on now. If we revoke Resolution 3379, that means we have to revoke Resolutions 1904, Resolution 3151, and Resolution 77. It took a lot of us to agree upon that. You want to now change the rules of the United Nations just because you are unsatisfied with Resolution 3379? Please wake up. This is very important. Then it says, on December 16, 1999, Israel also cites as a major benefit for the conference and the peace process the greatly increased number of countries which recognize and have some degree of diplomatic relations with it, nearly doubling, in particular citing the major powers of China and India and some even in the Arab world, like Oman, Qatar, Tunisia, Morocco, and Mauritanian. Also, with the decline of the Arab boycott and economic relations with some of the Arab countries. Now, think about this. The Arab boycott. That means that this was an economic stronghold on people. After Resolution 1979-75, Israel said, okay, we're a racist. Boom. Everybody that voted on it, I can guarantee you, suffered. Because they own the economic structure. Okay, then it says, in the Palestinian state conflict, a basic introduction, George Harms and Todd Ferry argued that the symbolic significance of the Madrid conference far outweighed its accomplishments, which were thin indeed. Nevertheless, an example had made and a future model had been laid down. Moreover, the Madrid conference represented the first time all these countries had been gathered face-to-face, indeed, from Rhodesia in 1949 to Madrid in 1999. Attempts to bring about peace in the region had failed. However, although the conference led to a few particular and legal solutions, the Madrid Peace Conference of 1999 still signifies a remarkable twist in events. Okay? As the Palestinian question was at long last dealt with, yet because of the Madrid conference was based on the idea of abandoning the dynamics of the confrontation. Okay, I'm going to finish up. Because, but most important, because what ensured through the Oslo Accord were isolated arrangements of disorganization, technicalities such as crossing borders, security prisoners, and so on. Numerous of people are nowadays still oppressed to the ground, opposed to the groundbreaking leap with which the Madrid Peace Conference of 1999 represents to many. On the other hand, in 2002, the German Foreign Minister, Jakob Fischer, while voicing his opinion on a proposed future action of the Israel withdrawal from recent occupied towns, followed by a declaration of Palestinian state. Okay? And then he reads to it. All right, now... What I want to do is, I'm not going to read this part because these are people that are, you know, these people, actually, let me read this. This is, goes, thank you, American Secretary of State. James Baker seemed to have accomplished what he had initially wished for, peace negotiating with, which would lead to closer cooperation and reconciliation between the countries of the Middle East. And however, argues that by 1999, Clinton came to office, the initial momentum of Madrid had flogged, and the subsequent bilateral talks in Washington between Israel and its neighboring had got boggled down. Thus, the Madrid conference was not to be the conference which would create peace in the Middle East, albeit the first step towards greater understanding and better communication among Middle East countries. All right, now I know this is a lot. I know it's a lot, but it's important that we read these documents. It's important that we know these documents exist, and it's important that we understand the history of these documents. Okay? Now, the countries that sponsored this, Now, that means that these are countries that said, they now all of a sudden these countries have a change of heart. Because now they're economically forced. Now, when you sponsor something, that means you automatically vote for it. Okay. Now, before, the countries that sponsored it weren't as much to this, and the sponsor to basically revolt the fact that they're racist. Okay. It comes up and says, Albany, I'm not going to read them all, but there were, I believe, 100. I think there was over almost 100 ones that sponsored it. And look at the economic interest that the United States had on these countries that sponsored it. Now, the ones that were in favor of it, it only has 23. It has Benin, Botswana, Cambodia, Cameroon, Cape Verde, Congo, Ivory Coast, Fiji, Gabon, Haiti, India, Kenya, Madagascar, Namibia, Nepal, Nigeria, Philippines, Seychelles, Thailand, Togo. Now, if you were to look at those countries, you know that none of those countries have power. They're all owned by the United States or Israel. Do you really think Haiti has a choice in voting if it's if it's racist or not? Haiti, Kenya, Britain made the borders of these countries. Cambodia? Come on, y'all. This was not a fair vote. Now, the ones that were against it, listen to this. Listen to the countries that were against it, that stuck by the first resolution. Afghanistan, Algeria, Bangladesh, Brunei, Cuba, Democratic People's Republic of Korea, Indonesia, Iran, Iraq, Jordan, Lebanon, Libya, Malaysia, Mali, Mauritania, Pakistan, Uttar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, Sri Lanka, Sudan, Syria, United Emirates, Vietnam, and Yemen. Okay? Now, all the countries that I read there are having wars on their soil. We know what happened to Iraq. We know that Iran's going to be invaded. Libya's pretty much done. What the war in Lebanon that was over there? Okay? Yemen, everybody knows what's happening in Yemen. Sudan, they split Sudan. Look what's going on in Somalia. All of these countries that were against that, the revoking that racism, are suffering for it. Okay? Now, the ones that abstained were Zimbabwe, Trinidad, Turkey, Uganda. They're the ones that didn't even want to abstain. They're abstaining for it, and then the ones that were even absent, they didn't even bother to show up. It was Kuwait, Morocco, Nigeria, Oman, Senegal, Tunisia, Guinea, Egypt. I mean, this isn't unified. Okay? Now, if you look at the vote, you still will see that they actually lost the vote. Because 23 voted in favor of it, but when you count the nations, 25 still wanted to keep the fact that it was racism as a valid vote.
Napoleon once said, history is a fable agreed upon, and the fable agreed upon up to now is that American history is white on white. But sometimes we did get into the history books all wrong. Now you take this one. The Growth of the American Republic, 1942 edition. Samuel Eliot Morrison, Henry Steele Cummager. Quote, as for. This has to do with slavery. As for Sambo, Professor Morrison, Sambo, Professor Cummager, as for Sambo, whose wrongs moved the abolitionists to wrath and tears, there is some reason to believe that he suffered less than any other class in the South from its peculiar institution. Peculiar institution means slavery. Although brought to America by force, the incurably optimistic Negro soon became attached to the country and devoted to his white folks. Unquote. Those lines were written by two Pulitzer Prize winning white Northern professors. Slavery. That's the place everybody likes to start Negro history. You have ignorant black men being brought over from Africa in chains. Terrible thing, slavery. But this way slavery is taught, it sort of takes the sting out of it. Because the way it's usually taught, people think that we Afro-Americans started with nothing but little grass skirts like the kids in the Tarzan movies. And though America gave us slavery, America kindly gave us religion and a lick or two of education. And when we get more jobs and more education, up from slavery. But we had something before we left Africa, something more than rhythm. I mean, we had a high culture. Culture was so high that great artists in the world are still borrowing from it. Now, if you tell the history of slavery right, you got a big problem on your hands. The slave trader didn't take some savage out of Africa. He took a human being, sold him like an animal, and separated him from his family. America invented the cruelest slavery in the history of the world because it broke up black families. After slavery was over, America kept breaking up the black man's family. And that's some awful history to teach. Now, if you want to look history right straight in the eye, you're going to get a black eye. Because it isn't important whether a few black heroes got lost or stolen or strayed in America's history textbooks. What's important is why they got left out. Now, this country has got a psychological history. There was a master race, and there was a slave race. And though there isn't any political slavery anymore, those same old attitudes have hung around. I mean, the burning part of Burn, Baby, Burn is right here in this classroom. We want to thank Mrs. Lovely Billups and the whole gang here at fourth grade for the brilliant and intelligent artwork that they've done here to make this whole broadcast sing. I want you guys to keep pretending that I'm not here. You're doing a great job, and just keep on drawing and reading and writing, doing what you have to do, because I'm going to talk about some other kids.
Okay, welcome back. I actually had got kicked off. So I had to play an audio file until I can get reconnected. If you can hear me in the chat room, just say I can hear you to make sure that I'm not on mute, and then I can continue. Where we left off was I was speaking about how the can someone say I can hear you in the chat room? Okay, thank you very much. I was speaking about this documentation on racism. Now, this is important because what we're doing now is we're actually seeing the power of Zionism. Okay? Now, we're able to actually see the power of Zionism and its effect on the world and how it pushed the countries into a resolution, making them change their minds forcibly. And they were able to do it with 111 countries. Now, other countries, of course, they willingly did it. You know, we have like Sweden, Denmark, Great Britain, United States, you know what I'm saying. But now, mind you, now we have the fall of communism. In that same year, they took it upon themselves and said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do away with that resolution. Now, this is what George Bush says. He says, George Herbert Walker Bush, personally, I introduced the motion to revoke 3379 with these words. Bush did it. Skull and Bones. Everybody hear about that? His father was the one, Prescott Bush, who actually supported the Nazis. George Bush, who was in the director of the CIA, he wrote the resolution. Something wrong here. It says, and now for the first time, we have a real chance to fulfill the UN Charter ambition of working to save succeeding generations from the scourge of war, to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, and the dignity and worth of the human person. This is George Bush saying this. And the equal rights of men and women in nations, large and small, to promote social progress and better standards of life and larger freedom. They always use that word, freedom. Freedom. Those are the words from the Charter. We will not revive these ideas if we fail to acknowledge the challenge that the renewal of history presents. No one here can promise that today's borders will remain fixed for all time, but we must strive to ensure the peaceful negotiations, statements of border disputes. We also must promote the cause of international harmony by addressing old feuds. We should take seriously the Charter's pledge to practice, tolerance and live together in peace with one another as good neighbors. He goes on to say, UNGA Resolution 3379, the, quote, so-called Zionism is racism resolution, mocks this pledge and the principles upon which the United Nations was founded. Then he says, and I call now for its repeal. Zionism is not a policy. It is the idea that led to the creation of a home for the Jewish people, to the state of Israel. And to equate Zionism with the intolerable sin of racism is to twist history and to forget the terrible plight of the Jews in World War II. And indeed, throughout history, to equate Zionism with racism is to reject Israel, itself a member of good standing of the United Nations. This body cannot claim to seek peace and at the same time challenge Israel's right to exist. By repealing this resolution unconditionally, the United Nations will enhance its credibility and serve the cause of peace. So, the way to make the United Nations credible is to force it to the will of Zionism. That's what they're saying. Okay? They're like, we need to make the United Nations credible. That thing that you said about Zionism, no. I, George Bush, am going to reject it. And I'm going to make sure I have over 100 people on board by force. This is very dangerous. Because what this means is that the United Nations, which is supposed to be for all nations to adhere to, is being manipulated by a force. Please put that concept, because it's not just a concept, it is a reality that happened. Okay? Then it says, what does it do? It ignores. By him forcing the United Nations to take this away, it ignores its own resolutions. Three of them. 1904, 3151, and 77. Okay? What it does is it forces the United Nations to ignore fair democracy, which it was set up for. And how is this to make it credible? Because what he says is this body cannot claim to seek peace and at the same time challenge Israel's right to exist. By repealing this resolution unconditionally, the United Nations will enhance its credibility and serve the cause of peace. So it was not credible because the nations voted that it was racist. When all you had to do is just listen to the people that were putting forth the complaints. And they voted on it without being forced. They did it through their own will and say, look, this is why. But now democracy is being forced on people. Just like all the states that we see that they own, they install the dictators. They tell you what to say. They tell Iran, you can't have a nuclear plant. You hear them? Uganda, you can't do this. Ghana, you can't do that. Sierra Leone, you can't do this. Now, here comes the vote. You're going to vote this way. How is this united? How is this democracy? That's fascism. Fascism. Okay? Now, this isn't all doom and gloom. But I wanted to make that point. Now, there's something here that I want you to understand. Now, this is where we come to Kwame Nkrumah. I hope I'm saying his name right, because like I told you, I'm actually starting to learn more about him. But his story is unbelievable if you can understand how it relates to us being Hebrews of the seed of Yaakov. Now, I'm going to paraphrase here, and then I'm going to read it later, and then we're going to open up the phone to callers. We have about 8 minutes left. So what I want people to do is I want you to call in 213-325-3434. That's 213-325-3434. We're going to open up the phones to questions. We're going to go to the other side, and then we are going to discuss this in detail. This is documented. I ask that you download. And also, I want to mention something. The other day when I did the broadcast on Connie 2012, I asked you to listen to it if you haven't heard it, and I asked you to download it. It is very important that you follow the instructions that I asked you to do on that broadcast, and that is to go and sign the petition. If you're too nervous to sign the petition, it's okay. Don't worry. Their power is waning. They don't have the power that they did. Here's an example. What happened in, I believe it was September of 2000, no, October, October 31st, 2011. What happened? Okay. I don't know if it's October. This is what happened. Let me explain to you. There was a vote brought forth by the United Nations. Okay. The vote that was brought forth by the United Nations, they were asking if Palestine should become a state. Okay. Now, these are nations that were, years before, were forced to say, no. Zionism is not racism. Now they have another vote. And this is a vote in favor of Palestine becoming a state. There was 107 votes to guess how many? 14. 14 were against. And guess who was in there? Of course, the United States. Of course, Israel. Of course, Great Britain. Same old France. All these countries. But yet they only got 14. 52 of them abstained and 12 were absent. Very important to understand. That means that the power of Zionism is now, once again, failing. They're going to have to now come up with another vote to say that, oh, no, Palestine is not a state. This is not what you mean. So 107 of you that were in favor of it now have to change your vote again because that's not what you really meant to vote for, is it? Do you see what's happening? The United Nations is being controlled. How else can you explain cholera in Haiti? How else can you explain the rape of that boy in Haiti, that young man? How else can you explain before all of the earthquake that happened when the United Nations officers were just killing indiscriminately the people in Haiti? Do research on Haiti. Understand, this has been happening. The Haitian minerals that were taken? They found millions of tonnage of gold in Haiti in the mountains. They found minerals, but yet the American companies are taking those minerals from Haiti. People are starving. They're eating mud in Haiti. Okay? But yet the UN is not doing anything to help that poverty. They're just putting them in more and more debt. Okay? Now we have the problems with the World Health Organization, in which they were putting the AIDS virus in the smallpox in Africa, killing Africans. Look this up. This is documented, 1987. London Times reported it. 1987, London Times. AIDS virus in vaccines. Okay? No one is brought to justice. The UN keeps going on. Well, the question is, well, who's in control of the UN? Who is in control? Now, but amongst all that control, 107 nations said no. What you're doing to Palestine is wrong. They deserve to have their own state. 107, even during all of the power that the United Nations has. I mean, that the United States and Israel and France and Great Britain have over the United Nations. These countries still decided to stand up to say Palestine deserves to be a state. So, I want you to think about that. Now, we got 3 minutes, and we're going to go on the other side, and then I'm going to explain to you why I'm excited, and I'm going to read something to you. The call-in number is 213-325-3434. That's 213-325-3434. If you have a question, I think you press the 1, and then I will answer the phone. We're going to have open topic for you on the other side. I ask that, Brother D, if you're listening, you can call in to make sure that people, you know, in case I need you to, actually, no, I don't need anybody to handle the chat. But anyway, just call in anyway, Brother D. I'd like to speak to you. We have about 2 minutes. I'm going to play a file, then let this play until the other side, and then I'll continue with you know, I'll continue when it's finished. Okay. Here we go. This is What is a Slave?
By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there, they that carried us away captive required of us a song. And they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. Fellow citizens, above your national tumultuous joy, I hear the mournful wail of millions whose chains, heavy and grievous yesterday, are today rendered more intolerable by the jubilee shouts that reach them. If I do forget, if I do not faithfully remember those bleeding children of sorrow this day, may my right hand forget her cunning, and may my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. To forget them, to pass lightly over their wrongs, and to chime in with the popular theme would be treason most scandalous and shocking, and would make me a reproach before God and the world. My subject, then, fellow citizens, is American slavery. I shall see this day and its popular characteristics from the slave's point of view. Standing there, identified with the American bondman, making his wrongs mine, I do not hesitate to declare with all my soul that the character and conduct of this nation never looked blacker to me than on the 4th of July.
Okay, thank you for coming on the other side. Thank you for coming in, Daniel Judah. Hello, Brother D.
Can you hear me, brother?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I called in a different way. I didn't know if you could hear me because something's going on here.
No problem. How do you like the broadcast so far?
It was good. I missed a little bit of it because I had my niece here, but I was catching a lot of it, like especially towards the beginning, and just listening to Brother Toure talk. And I mean, he articulated his points perfectly, man. About Zionism, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we should be able to do that, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I was sitting back fascinated listening to some of these clips, man. This is good stuff. I learned a lot today.
It's one of those things that I say you're gonna have to download and then you have to listen to later.
I will. Right, I'm gonna make sure I listen to it in its entirety.
Okay, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna put you on hold again. And I'm going to open up the phone lines after I finish this point. This is very exciting, and I hope other people see it, what I'm going to say, okay?
Okay, bro.
All right, brother. Bye. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here is why I wanted to play all that and also play Stokely Carmichael. Now, those of us that understand the Hebrews and the history of the Hebrews, there's always somebody that the Most High sends for us to wake us up out of darkness. He never leaves us alone. Understand that. Now, see, the average Christian does not understand that because the average Christian is not a Hebrew of the seed of Yaakov. The average Christian is the Caucasian who attached himself to the religion of Christianity, but not realizing that it is a continuance of the culture of the Hebrews. Now, I say that because there are certain individuals within the black community, the African community, that we have to look to as those prophets. And if you don't know where to look, meaning the people of color, then you will miss it. Case in point, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, and I hope I'm saying his name right. Now, people say, oh, no, Malcolm X. Louis Farrakhan. Louis Farrakhan is telling us that a man like Moses is Elijah Muhammad. But when we look at the history of Elijah Muhammad, the main person that he was listening to was that character by the name of Dodd. And we know how sketchy his history is, so we're not going to get into that. Just listen to Rise of the Black Messiah. Okay? Now, Kwame, you have to read his history in order to know where I'm coming from on this. Now, this brother did exactly what he needed to do in order to free us by therefore fulfilling a prophecy. Okay, it says, I'm just going to have to read it. Okay, Kwame, September 22nd, 1909, and he died April 22nd, 1972. Because he was the leader of Ghana, and its predecessor state of Gold Coast from 1952 to 1966, overseeing the nation's independence from British colony rule in 1957. Nkrumah was the first president of Ghana and the prime minister of Ghana, an influential 20th century advocate of Pan-Africanism. He was the founding member of the Organization of African Unity and was the winner of the Lenin Prize in 1963. Okay, now listen to the education. Listen to this. Kwame Nkrumah was born in 1909 to Madam Nyan Naba in Nakufu, Gold Coast. Okay, Kwame graduated from the Akwudu School in Accra in 1930, studied at the Roman Catholic Seminaries, and taught at Catholic School in Axim. He left Ghana for the United States in 1935, received a bachelor's degree from the Lincoln University of Pennsylvania. In 1939, where he pledged the Mu Kappa and Phi Beta Sigma fraternity, he received the Bachelor of Sacred Theology in 1942. Now, when we look at these Phi Beta Sigma, we're like, oh, you know, but calm down, calm down. Kwame earned a Master of Science in the Education from the University of Pennsylvania in 1942 and a Master of Arts in Philosophy the following year. While lecturing in political science at Lincoln, he was elected president of the African Students Organization in American Canon, and undergraduate at Lincoln, he participated in at the Last One Student Theater Production and published an essay of European government in Africa in the student newspaper. Okay, now I read that so you can get an understanding of his education. Now, why is this important? Because, you know, he had to put himself through these schools. None of the schools that I've seen him go through are the schools that would mean red flag, missionary, you know, like Booker T. Washington went to the school that was actually sponsored by those that wanted to control us after we got out, released from slavery. None of those schools were mentioned. Now listen to what he does after he gets his education. It says, during his time in the United States, Kwame preached at black Presbyterian churches in Philadelphia and New York City. Then it says he read books about political divinity and tutored students in philosophy. Kwame encountered the ideas of Marcus Garvey and in 1943 met and began a lengthy correspondence with Trinidadian Marxist CLR, James Russian, Raya Dunaya Vakia, and Chinese American Grace Lee Boggs, all of whom were members of the U.S. based Trovatsik's intellectual cohort. Kwame later credited James with teaching him how and understanding underground movements worked. So Kwame was being taught how to organize. Very important. He was being taught how to organize. The Most High is setting him up. Remember now, where do you look for the Jeremiah, Yahshua, Isaac, Isaiah, Elijah? Where do you look for these prophets? Amongst the seed of Yaakov. So significant changes in society have to follow these people. But if you don't know, if you do not know how to look at it or for it, then you'll miss it. Now, did you notice how it said that he encountered the ideas of Marcus Garvey? Now, remember, Marcus Garvey was speaking about going to Guyana to build a nation. Is it a coincidence that Kwame is from Guyana? Did they get together and talk about it? Think about that now. All right, now it says he arrived in London, May 1943. That means he went back home, intending to study at the LSE. After meeting with George Podmore, he helped organize the 5th Pan-African Congress in Manchester, England. Then he founded the West African National Secretariat to work for decolonization of Africa. Kwame served as vice president of the Western of the West African Student Union. Okay? Now it says, return to the Gold Coast. In the autumn of 1947, Kwame was invited to serve as the General Secretary to the United Gold Coast Convention under Joseph Dangwish. This political convention was exploring path to independence, accepting the position and sealed for the Gold Coast. After brief stops in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ivory Coast, he arrived in the Gold Coast in December 1947. This is 1 year before Israel becoming a state. Okay. Now, on February 1948. It says, police fired on African ex-servicemen protesting the rising cost of living, killing or injuring 68. The shooting spurred riots in Accra, Kumasi, and elsewhere. The government suspected the UGCC was behind the protest, and on 12th of March 1998, they arrested now Kwame and other party leaders, realizing their error. Okay, party leaders. And it says, realizing their error, the British released the convention leader on 12th of April 1948 after his imprisonment by the colonial government. Kwame emerged as a leader of the youth movement in 1948. Okay? Now, they arrested him because they were watching him very closely. Who's this guy going to the United States, you know, taking on Marcus Garvey, speaking about pan-Africanism? They're watching him. They're observing this guy. So they arrest him, but they made an error. Oh, interesting. Okay? Now, listen to this. It says, after his release, Kwame hitchhiked around the country. He proclaimed that the Gold Coast needed self-government now and built a large power base. Cocoa farmers railed to his cause because they disagreed with British policy to contain swollen shot disease. He invited women to participate in the political process. At the time, women's suffrage was new to Africa. It means that now when the usurper was there, now he's oppressing the people. The trade unions also aligned with his movement. By 1949, he organized these groups into a new political, new party, the Convention People's Party. Okay? It's called the Convention People's Party. And look that up. Okay. Now, it says, the British convened a selected commission of middle-class Africans to draft a new constitution that would give Guyana more self-government. Under the new constitution, only those with suffrage, wages, and property would be allowed to vote. Kwame organized a people's assembly with CPP party members, youth trade unions, farmers, and veterans. They called for a universal franchise without property qualifications, a separate House of Chiefs, and a self-governed status under the Statute of Westminster of 1931. These amendments, known as the Constitutional Proposal of October 49, were rejected by the colonial administration. So now they are starting to organize, and they're starting to propose things. Propose them. Now the government is like, oh, hold on now. They rejected that. Then what happens? It says, when the colonial administration rejected the People's Assembly recommendation, Kwame organized a positive action campaign on the 1st of January 1950, including civil disobedience, non-cooperation, boycotts, and strikes. The colonial administration immediately arrested Kwame and many CPP supporters, and he was sentenced to 3 years in prison. Okay? Now, think of this now. He's organizing. He's being effective. They reject his proposal. He is now getting people inspired to strike. The British rule on Guyana is now starting to fade. They're like, wait, who is this guy? So they threw him in prison, which is the worst thing you can do to a black man. Take away his freedom. What does he do in prison? He's pissed, but he's thinking, where did I go wrong? What could I do right? All right? He's thinking. 3 years of isolation. All right? He's wondering, like, how did they know? Why did they arrest me at first? Were they listening to me? What's going on here? How did I fail? So Kwame now is fulfilling his destiny. He's fulfilling his destiny. What does he do when he gets out of prison? It says, Prime Minister of the Gold Coast, Dr. Kwame, with Egyptian Egyptologist Paha Libib at the Coptic Museum in Cairo, in Egypt in 1956, Facing international protests and internal resistance, the British decided to leave the Gold Coast. So now what happens is he's in prison for 3 years. When he releases prison, the British are now facing protests and internal resistance. So now they leave the Gold Coast. Then it says, Britain organized the first general election to be held under universal franchise of 5-12 February 1951. Though in jail, Kwame's CPP was elected by landslide, taking 34 out of 38 election seats in the legislation. And then it says it's credited by Komla Akabeli Gibadma. I know I messed that name up, but it's credited with organizing Kwame's entire campaign while he was still in prison. So we have to give praise to this brother, Komla, because what he did was, while Kwame was in prison, he got people to vote for him. He got people inspired because the Pan-Africanist mind was taught to him. And he saw the vision. He saw what Kwame was trying to do, which he learned from Marcus Garvey. Okay? Now, what was Marcus Garvey trying to do? He said, I'm going to get some ships. We're going to have land in Guyana. Those ships are going to travel, and we're going to go back and forth. We're going to take you back to Africa. He started an organization, and then what happened? The FBI destroyed it. But Kwame, he took the baton. And what does it say? Kwame was released from prison on the 12th of February and was summoned by Sir Charles Alden Clark, the governor, and asked to form a government on the 13th. The new legislative assembly met on the 20th of February with Kwame as leader of government business and C.E. Quest as president of the assembly. 1 year later, the constitution was amended to provide for a prime minister. On the 10th of March, 1952, and Kwame was elected to post by secret ballot in the assembly. It says 45-31, 45 in favor, 31, with 8 absentees on the 21st of March. Then it says he presented his motion of destiny to assembly request independent within the British Commonwealth as soon as necessary conditional arrangements are made on the 10th of July, 1953, and the body approved it. Okay? So he basically got independence from Great Britain. He's requesting independence from Great Britain. The brother that was in prison, he goes back and learns Pan-Africanism. And he's getting freedom for his people. Now understand, Guyana, the historical information about Guyana talks about how the Hebrews were dwelling in that land. Look it up. There are many, many, many Hebrews there. Kwame, a Hebrew, fulfilling scriptures. It says, as a leader of this government, Kwame faced many challenges. First, to learn to govern. Second, to unify the four territories of the Gold Coast. Third, to win the nation's complete independence from the United Kingdom. Kwame was successful at all three goals. Within 6 years of his release from prison, he was a leader of an independent nation. Then it says on the 12th a.m. on the 6th of March, 1957, Kwame Nkrumah declared Ghana independent. The country became independent as a Commonwealth realm. Okay? He was hailed as Osagyefo, and I know I messed that up, but it's African. It means redeemer in the Twi language. So this is an African tribe. They call him redeemer. And when you look up these Twi, it's the Hebrews. He was the Redeemer. He freed us from Great Britain without firing a shot. This was a peaceful revolution based on their system. They created the system of democracy. They had to follow the system because the people revolted against what they thought was unfair. They picked their leader, Kwame, who was able to fulfill what Marcus Garvey wanted to do, which the FBI suppressed him to do. How did Marcus Garvey know that it would be Guyana that would be free? Kwame fulfilled it. And now we're free. Now think about that gray substance. They got a whole country now. That means they got the gold that's in the land. They got the oil that's in the land. They got everything. Cocoa. That's gray substance right there. Independent. Okay? Then it says, on March 6, 1990, Kwame announced plans for a new constitution which would make Ghana a republic. The draft included a provision to surrender Guyanan sovereignty to a Union of African State on the 19th, 23rd, 27th of April, 1990, a presidential election, and then the constitution was held. The constitution was ratified, and Kwame was elected president. Okay? Now, it says in 1961, Kwame led the first stone in the Federation. He laid the first stone in the foundation of Kwame Nkrumah Ideological Institute, created to train Ghanaian civil servants as well as promote Pan-Africanism. In 1964, all students entered college in Guyana were required to attend 2 weeks ideological orientation. At the institution, Kwame remarked that trainees would be made to realize the party's ideological is religion. The trainees should be made to realize the party's ideology is religion and should be practiced faithfully and fervently. Now, this can't be communism if they have religion involved. Okay? What does he say? He says, 1963, he's awarded the Lenin Peace Prize by the Soviet Union. The Gold Coast has been among the wealthiest and most socially advanced African areas in Africa, with schools, railroads, hospitals, social security, and an advanced economy. Under Kwame's leadership, Guyana adopted some social policies and practices, creating a welfare state, stated various community programs and established schools. When they say a welfare state, what they mean is that here in Sweden, if a woman has a child, then they get a year off to take care of that child. This is socialism. If you have a child, the government gives you certain amounts of money so you can take care of that child. This is socialism. Health care is free. If you get into an accident, you get health care. That's socialism. It means that they take care of their citizens, because when you pay the taxes in the country, it is put towards to make sure that nobody is homeless and nobody is hungry. Okay? This is the system of socialism. This is the system that Kwame wanted to build. Okay? Let me see. Now, to make sure that we have enough time, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read what this is an essay written by this is to explain what Kwame, type of government that Kwame wanted to build. It says, we know that the traditional African society was founded on principles of equalarianism. Okay? Equalarianism. What does that mean? Equalarianism is the asserting result from a characterized by belief in the equal of all people, especially in political, economic, and social life. Okay? Equal. So it says the principle or equalarianism. In its actual working, however, it had various shortcomings. Its humanist impulse, nevertheless, is something that continues to urge us towards our all-African societies. Reconstruction, we proselyte each other to be an end in himself, not merely a means, and we accept the necessity of guaranteeing each man equal opportunities for his development. The implication of this for social political practice has to be worked out scientifically, and the necessary social and economic policies pursued with resolution. Any meaningful humanitarian must begin from the equalitarianism and must lead to objectively chosen policies for safeguarding, sustaining equalitarianism, hence socialism, hence also scientific socialism. What he's saying is that socialism and scientific socialism must follow the ideal of equalitarianism, okay? Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep going because what people understand is that it says here, later he sat on a unification movement that enumerates from the basis with anti-imperialist governments and between the Western-backed puppet regime could be no common ground. Kwame was also best known politically for his strong commitment to and promotion of Pan-Africanism. He was inspired by the writings of black intellectuals like Marcus Garvey, W.E.B. Du Bois, George Padmore, and his relationship with them. Okay? Kwame's biggest success in this area was his significant influence in the founding of the Organization of the African Union. All right? Now, here is where this is interesting. Now, we have to understand. In the United States, we had Garveyism. He inspired us, millions of people, but the United States destroyed it through the FBI, COINTELPRO, and they keep destroying it. But in the other side, of the ocean, we have Kwame organizing, and it works. We're free. We have the first free nation. Now, you understand, 400 years of slavery, imperialism, and now we have a free African nation. Now, I advise you to read the whole article on Kwame because it's important. Now, it's significant because now we have to realize how did it get destroyed. What happened was they did the same old, same old. Hold on, actually. I got to take a quick break. And then I'll be right back, okay? Give me a few minutes. Hold on, I'm going to play this audio file, and I'll be right back.
And this is the poem that I always close every reading of mine. After this poem, I read no more. Strong men. Strong men. The strong men keep coming on. Carl Sandburg. They dragged you from homeland. They chained you in coffles. They huddled you, spoon fashion, in filthy hatches. They sold you to give a few gentlemen ease. They broke you in like oxen. They scourged you. They branded you. They made your women breeders. They swelled your numbers with bastards. They taught you the religion they disgraced. You sang, keep inching along like a poet's worm. You sang, by and by I'm gonna lay down this heavy load. You sang, walk together, chillin', don't you get weary. The strong men keep a-coming on, the strong men get stronger. They point with pride to the road you built for them. They ride in comfort over the rails you laid for them. They put hammers in your hands and said, drive so much before sundown. You sang, ain't no hammer in this land. Strikes like mine, baby, strikes like mine. They cooked you in their kitchen. They penned you in their factories. They gave you the jobs that they were too good for. They tried to guarantee happiness to themselves by shunting dirt and misery to you. You sang, me and my baby gonna shine, shine. Me and my baby gonna shine. The strong men keep a-coming on. The strong men get stronger. They bought off some of your leaders. You stumbled, as blind men will. They coaxed you unwontedly soft-voiced. You followed away, then laughed as usual. They heard the laugh and wondered, uncomfortable, unadmitting a deeper terror. The strong men keep a-coming on, getting stronger. What from the slums where they have hemmed you? What from the tiny huts they could not keep from you? What reaches them, making them ill at ease, fearful? Today they shout prohibitions at you. Thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, reserved for whites only. You laugh. One thing they cannot prohibit, the strong men coming on, the strong men getting stronger, strong men stronger.
Okay, welcome back. I had to take a quick break real quick. Sorry about that. Okay, let me continue. Now, Kwame, okay, what did he do? He inspired other African nations to be free. He inspired them for true independence. And they were doing it peacefully. But what happened? Well, Great Britain asked for help. They called upon the United States in order to stop this new awakening, this pan-Africanism. And then the CIA gets involved. Then we have Patrice Lumumba being assassinated. You know, Kwame, I think he was only 62 when he died. Okay? But now how did his government fall? It fell because of economics. Okay, now we say, well, there was corruption. Eventually, Kwame's government turned into what we see today, where they were started to distrust each other, and the whole thing fell apart. But then when you research it, you actually realize that it was Great Britain that created the economic policies. They didn't trade with them. See, they forgot that they didn't own the money. The money was owned by another party, and they own the trade. They systematically destroyed this government of Guyana. Okay, now listen to this. It says, Kwame's advocacy for industrial development at any cost, with help of longtime friend and minister of finance, Kamla Agbele Gibidima, led to the construction of a hydraulic power plant. Now listen to how they did this. The Aksomumba Dam on the Volta River in eastern Guyana, it said, a company by the name of Kaiser Aluminum. Now, that name Kaiser, okay? Kaiser Aluminum agreed to build the dam for Nkrumah, but restricted what could be produced using the power generated. Now, think about this. They said, okay, we're going to build you a dam, but you can't use the power from the dam. What's the point? You see what I'm saying? You have a company that has the ability to build a dam. They said, I'll build it for you, and they do. But then they said, oh, by the way, we agree to build the dam, but it says, but you are restricted what could be produced using the power generated from this dam. The man's hands are tied. Then it says, Kwame borrowed money, okay, to build the dam and place Ghana in debt. Now, to finance the debt, he raised taxes on coca farmers in the south. This accentuated regional differences and jealousy. The dam was completed and opened by Kwame amidst world publicity on the 22nd of January 1966, and that's the time his actual government fell. It says Kwame wanted Ghana to have modern armed forces, so he acquired aircraft and ships and introduced conscription. He also gave military support to anti-British European Empire, backed governance guerrillas in Rhodesia, Zimbabwe in February 1966, while Kwame was on a state visit to North Vietnam and China. His government was overthrown in a military coup led by Emmanuel Kwasi Kwatutka and the National Liberation Council. Several commentators, such as John Stockwell, have claimed the coup received support from the CIA. Okay? So the CIA destroyed it. Kaiser Aluminum, okay, I'm going to look at that company to see who actually owns it, put him in debt. So now he has a $1 billion debt with no way on paying it off because the economy is being manipulated by outside forces. But don't overlook the most important fact is that we are going to be free. Now, how is this important? Well, when we look at Pan-Africanism and we look at Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, and we listen to what he's saying, he's saying that we need to come together as all people. We have so much in common with Guyana because it's all the same struggle. But it's not just Guyana, it's all over Africa. The only reason why they're going into this area with Kony is because in the Republic of the Congo, okay, they have found $24 trillion in resources. $24 trillion estimation. I mean, $1 trillion is a lot of money, but $24 trillion? And you've got a handful of companies that are in there taking all of the money out of the Congo, all the minerals, gold, diamond, cobalt. They just found oil in Uganda. This is why they're going in there with AFRICOM. These are the resources that we could use to build up our nation. And then, but yet, Kwame did it. He created a free, independent African nation. Now, we can actually look at that and assist our brothers and sisters over in Africa. We can reconnect our history, see that we're one people, because these parties are still in existence, and then we bring forth this to the world. Okay? Now, there's other things that I want to say, but I notice that the time's ticking, and I'm going to open up some calls so we can answer some questions and we can get some more information in here. So if you want to get online, you can press 1. Brother D, do you hear me? Okay, you must be away. I'm going to open up some lines just in case people want to have questions. 313. I thought I saw Sister Leo on here. Oh, 1 second. Sorry about that, y'all. 832. Do you have any questions?
It just says it go in perfect chronological order.
Wait, hold on.
Of the week.
Brother D, do you hear me now? Am I still on? 914. Yeah, I don't know if there's something wrong with my line. I can't seem to hear anybody here. Okay, if you want to speak, just raise your hand on the phone. You press 1, and then I'll bring you in because I can't seem to when I put people off of mute. I don't hear anybody speaking. Okay, now, if you have any questions concerning the broadcast with Zionism or Stokely Carmichael, then it's good for you to bring them forth now. Or if you want to, the chat room's closed, so you can't write them in. But, you know, it's good to do it now. Okay, now, getting back to what I was saying about Kwame, is we have to look at the history of the Hebrews to see how significant that was. When he kicked the British out of Guyana, the only time that an African nation actually kicked a European nation out was in Haiti. And every time it happens, look at the result. Okay? We have to look at the result of what happened. Now, in Guyana, he came to the United States and he spoke with Marcus Garvey. Well, he took on the Marcus Garvey philosophy. The Hebrews were trying to be free. That Marcus Garvey philosophy was also attached itself to a Nation of Islam attached to that philosophy. And then out of that came Malcolm X. Okay? Now, here's what's interesting. Malcolm X was at the opposite side of Martin Luther King. But Martin Luther King worked closely with Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture. So now Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, is now a leader within, you know, he's a leader during the time of Martin Luther King. He inspires Martin Luther King to speak out on the war in Vietnam. And as Martin Luther King starts speaking out on this war in Vietnam, he gets assassinated. These are some significant things for the African American and the African as a whole. Because everything is connected. Okay? Martin Luther King gets assassinated, and what happens? Riots. Riots like crazy. And then it creates the Black Panther Party. And prime minister of that party is Stokely Carmichael. Stokely Carmichael is now prime minister. Okay? And now that he is prime minister, he brings forth the ideology of Kwame Nkrumah. Okay? See, everything now is becoming full circle. Now we are intertwined. The destinies are one. He creates the All African People's Party in Guinea, and Black Power, the Black Power movement, is a force to be reckoned with. All these civil rights laws start to pass, and then we as a people in the United States of America go through hell behind the scenes because all of the Black Power people end up in prison. They are killed. the movement itself is being watched by COINTELPRO, and the prime minister of the movement in 98 gets cancer. That means that this was something they were fighting. They were fighting the bull head on. Because what was the bull at this time? Well, if they had the agency against the Black Panther Party to crush it, then it was a threat to imperialism. Okay? That threat to imperialism also was going on in Africa, and that's why the CIA worked with the British and the other interest to suppress any revolution. Case in point, Patrick Lumumba being assassinated in the Congo. So we as Hebrews, we don't realize that since all of us are connected, we have to look at Pan-Africanism. And we have to look at Kwame in Guyana, who created the first independent nation, and then look at that Jamaican called Marcus Garvey, who had the dream of us going to Guyana with ships. And look how the FBI was there to destroy it. Okay? Very important. This is significant. That means that if we actually happen to connect ourselves with our brothers and sisters in Africa, then how powerful would we truly be? How powerful would we truly be? See, now, the black or the African, this is a struggle for all people of color on this planet. The struggle for freedom and justice, okay? So we have to unite with all people. Because it's a struggle of all people of color on this planet. It's the Palestinian struggle. It's the Palestinian struggles to still struggle against racism and oppression. It's the African struggle to struggle against racism and oppression. The Hebrews of the Sidi Yaakov, which is the original Hebrews of Scriptures, his struggle is against oppression and racism. The Hebrew of the Seed of Yaakov is not just the so-called Negroes in America. This is a multinational seed. This seed was enslaved all over the world, the four corners of the world. The Hebrews of the Seed of Yaakov, which are still enslaved on the continent of Africa, case in point, Ivory Coast, cocoa, slaves. Okay? The Sidi Yaakov was enslaved in Africa. It was enslaved in Brazil, Haiti, Jamaica, St. Thomas. It was enslaved in Argentina, in all of the Caribbean islands of the sea. We were everywhere. Wherever you go, the Seed of Yaakov was there. All the countries in South America, all the ones that they were given great profits for this slave, the slavery, the Spanish monarchy, which was the conquistadors, the conquerors, okay, they were the ones that were bringing them to South America from Africa. So you will find the Seed of Yaakov there. So all of those countries that are in South America, okay, the ones that are fighting against racism and oppression are a part of the Seed of Yaakov. They are still fighting against exploitation. Now, this struggle is a struggle of all people of color on the planet. Okay? So when they voted on is Zionism racism, and they all said yes, they wanted it documented what was happening. But Zionism is losing its power. Because 107 nations said, no, we will not be forced. We believe that Palestine is a state. Okay? Now, I hope I articulated this about the importance of us understanding who we are and where we come from, and understand that there are certain people in history, and I advise you to, I strongly recommend that you find out about Kwame and read a book for yourself. Don't just rely on Wikipedia, because they're going to say that, you know, he lost control of his government and he was just, you know, he went crazy. You know, they're going to make it look like it was his fault, but when in actuality, He who controls the economics, he who controls the dollar, controls the world. See, what happened was we had independence, but we didn't have financial independence. So there is no way that they would let that Guyana stand. Great Britain was like, no way. 13 years after it was established, it was destroyed. The government, the military, was actually controlled by the British. You know, he's going to make Kwame makes a military, but yet he has to pay for it. But now he's in debt. That's how they were able to create the coup so easy, because the military was controlled by the British. And then when they started to put pressure on it, then people started to revolt. And you can read and see what actually happened. So now what is this? We're actually learning a lesson. Now think about this, though. What if the African nations were free, were to get their freedom, and then they got powerful, and then they started to get their revenge? Massive revenge. And then, what if they don't know when to stop? What if then the African nations turn just like the Europeans that came before them? See, there's lessons to be learned here. We have to always look at the Most High and say, we always have to look at the Most High and put him on top. But since the enemy is using economics to control us, his economic foundation is being destroyed. Spain, Italy, Iceland, Portugal, Greece, all of these countries are falling financially. The United States of America, capitalism, is falling. Ron Paul is preaching to try to get people to go back to the foundation of the Constitution, but they're disregarding it. They're in a panic. The system is falling apart. And all we need to do, all we have to do, is connect with our brothers and sisters, organize, while this is falling, and remain standing. Now, I got about 6 minutes left. Does anybody have something to say? Going once. I hear something in the background. Hey, Brother D, do you still hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, brother.
Okay, do you have any comments before I close out?
No, not right now. I'm encouraged, though. Once I get to listen to this completely, brother, I have plenty of questions for you. You know that. Give me something to research.
Okay, good. And I hope I wasn't too confusing with this broadcast. I would like those that do have questions to, speak up and ask them. And I'm going to tell you, do not be fearful of using the word Zionism, and do not be fearful of speaking out for those people in Palestine. Revoke of the revolution, the resolution on racism, that right there was forced, okay? It was forced. And we all know how George Bush is. So if you have to force your power to say you have power, you don't really have real power. You can't say be loyal to me with a bullet to my head. When those nations become free, how are the countries going to stand with that type of pressure? Okay? All right. So with that, I'm going to sign out, and I'm going to play. To end, before I go, I want to say a closing prayer of Heavenly Father. I thank you for us coming together today. I ask that you continue to bless me, Father, and I ask that you open the ears of those that need to hear this message. I pray, Heavenly Father, that somebody out there will get something from this. I ask that you can protect me and my family, O Father. And I ask that those download this broadcast so they can listen to it in the future. I thank Heavenly Father for my friends. I thank you for my humble heart. I pray this in the name of our ancestors, O Father. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and our brother Yahushua. In that precious name, hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Okay, I'm going to be on Skype if anybody wants to call in there. Thank you so much for listening. See you next time.
We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he has allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.